Charlie and a few other friends. Chug a couple beers and talk politics. It's better when you're two beers in.
Hello and welcome to Two Beers In, DNC Recap Edition.
Tipsy Political Roundtable. I'm your co-host, Cody Lindquist.
I'm Charlie Todd. We're recording this live from South Carolina. We have no guest tonight.
No guest tonight. We're just having some beers and watching it on our own tonight.
We have some family down here, but it's 11:40 at night, so the family that's with us is either it's either too late for them or they're too conservative to agree to be on the podcast.
It's been a divided week, I have to say. Yeah. We're doing our best down here in the South, holding our own as the liberals down here, but I have cried all week watching most of the speeches. I don't know. How about you, Charlie? How are you feeling?
I think it was great. I think we've been on vacation for 2 weeks, which has been amazing. And we watched the RNC down here last week with some friends, and we watched the DNC this week. And the contrast is, I think, even starker than it normally is. I mean, I feel like I felt this way in 2012, 2008, 2004, that, you know, it's always very clearly a good versus evil, at least in my worldview, watching the two conventions back to back. But it just seemed like, well, so night and day.
So night and day. And actually, I was in New York this weekend working, and then I was flying back. And I was so defeated after the RNC and just was feeling so sad and just contemplating World War III. And then Michelle Obama spoke, and, like, my life changed. She gave me hope again. I needed that girl to just be like, yes. I was like, thank you. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, and just to talk broadly some more about the differences, like, the amazing thing to me is that all of the sort of themes of the Republican Party and the typical themes of Republican stump speeches or George Bush's State of the Unions or even Fox News talking points have been co-opted by the Democrats, I think, in a great, shrewd way. You know, we're used to Sean Hannity saying that America is the greatest country on God's earth, or God has made America the greatest country on his
American earth. Exceptionalism.
Yeah, the idea of American exceptionalism. And, you know, I think as Democrats, we've always been like, okay, well, yeah, well, but it's also, there are other countries too, and we have to work together, and we, you know, we're good, but we also had slavery and killed Indians, and let's not say that God made our country the best of all time, you know.
Oh, God.
But then last week's RNC was just, you know, everything is...
The apocalypse is coming.
Everything is awful. People are being shot in the streets. Blood is running in the streets, and I alone can fix the problem. And then this week, it's been, you know, it's been a parade of positivity and of Michelle Obama saying America is already great. Hillary echoed that tonight.
Don't you think that's a little bit, like, we're a little spoiled? Obama for the last 8 years has been like, hope, change, you know, like this, like, and that's why we love him. And for the last 8 years, it's been very much driven by that. And I think really what's pulling it even more is the contrast between the RNC.
It's just interesting that Republicans have become, this country sucks. We need to get a strong man in here to rule us.
A strong man.
Yeah. Specifically a strong man to get in here and rule us and make it better because everything is awful. You know, and the Democrats are like, nah, we're pretty great. We've got the best, even just like the military stuff, you know, that people were hitting on tonight, that we've got I think Joe Biden was hitting on that last night too. Like, we've got the best military in the world, and we do. Yeah. We spend, you know, many more, factor of many and spending.
I mean, I'm a woman, obviously, super, super feminist, but what really struck me tonight, when I was listening to Hillary speak, I was like, wow, wait a second. So if she wins the presidency, then this is the first, like, actual power couple where they are both completely 100% equal. Like, they've both held the most important office in the land.
Political power couple.
Yeah, just any power couple. Right. I mean, really, like, that just really is like, yeah, we are fucking equal as shit.
You don't think Brad and Angelina are equal?
yeah, actually, they are. That's true. Angelina's a pretty big badass.
It's amazing that they will move back to the White House. It's amazing that Chelsea will be the only person in history who both of their parents were president. I mean, obviously the only person in history whose mother was president. I mean, well, it's crazy.
People talk about her, like, writing this idea of Hillary riding his coattails to the White House, or somehow she's had an advantage or a leg up. And I was just thinking, well, this is different than, like, the nepotism that comes from having a parent give you something from when you're born. So it's easy to look at, you know, George Bush and be like, well, your dad was a president, so, you know, or was in politics, and so you had this leg up from birth. But, you know, they were equal in their relationship when they met.
Yeah, and they were a team, and she was part of the team that got him elected governor of Arkansas, and she was part of the team that got him elected president and reelected president. He was part of her team when she ran for the Senate, and, you know, I agree. It's the team is hopefully coming back to the White House.
Charlie, do you think that we are an equal team?
Politically, yes. Neither of us have held public office.
I like how you paused. That's so terrible. You paused for a second.
Well, I mean, what, just in the context of what we're talking about, there's things that...
You're supposed to say that I am better and more qualified and more prepared than you in every single way. That's the theme of the weekend.
100% we are a team. I thought it was a great convention. I will say that it started in a kind of terrifying way.
Oh, my God. I was so upset the first night.
The first night, there was so much heckling, and we didn't watch the daytime stuff to like 4 p.m.
And that's fine. Heckle at 4 p.m. I get it, Sanders supporters.
But don't, because people were like heckling, like Elijah Cummings was giving a speech about his sharecropper,
and you're saying like...
And people are heckling him. I mean, I just, I don't know.
Well, you know what that means. It means that we're officially over 35. That's
why we're old. We have friends that are Bernie supporters. We have friends that are still Bernie supporters. I don't think we have any friends that are Bernie or bust. But, you know, I guess I get protesting in the streets of Philadelphia for the so-called revolution. But, you know, being inside and heckling your own team while they're speaking, I guess they don't consider every speaker at the DNC to be their team, but...
No, but then if that's the case, then why are you at the DNC?
Yeah.
But, listen, I liked Bernie Sanders. I almost voted for him. I decided to vote for Hillary because I like her, and I think she's very qualified, and I am more centrist because I think knowing all the people down here that we can't... I might believe in a socialist society or democratic socialist society, but I know that half of our country is never going to even agree to universal health care. So, you know, we get what we get, and what we get is more center. But anyway, I was really scared. But you know what? What happened to those hecklers?
I think Michelle Obama happened to them. I just sobbed
during her speech.
There was a lot of heckling Monday night. Was Elizabeth Warren Monday night? I think she was.
No, she was yesterday.
She got heckled a little bit, too. I mean, there was some stupid, "we trusted you" chant that broke out. Probably just one guy. I mean, that's the problem, is that, you know, it could have been 20 people in there the entire time.
Do you think that they, like, left on purpose, or do you think that they were kicked out?
No, I mean, I think there was still some heckling even during Hillary's speech. I wasn't hearing much of it, but people were talking about it on Twitter who maybe had better speakers on their TV than we did. But I don't know. I think the speeches that were great and that sort of, you know, that were above and beyond and transcended the pettiness of what Debbie Wasserman Schultz may or may not have done, or what email some Southern Baptist who was an executive for the DNC did. Like, you know, who cares? You know, I mean, it was such a weird start to the week with the email leak and
which, you know, they timed specifically to happen before the DNC.
Right. Russia timed it, or Julian Assange, I guess.
We have to talk about today Donald Trump telling Russia to hack into Hillary's emails and find the 30,000 deleted emails. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, it is insane.
Isn't it treason?
It's insane.
By definition.
Yeah, I mean, if he was capable of understanding what treason was, or capable of understanding anything that he says might have consequences and affect someone else in a negative way. But yeah, I mean, for someone who's running for the nominee of one of the two parties,
oh my gosh,
to look into the camera and say foreign country who is somewhat of an adversary of ours, please hack into the State Department emails, which presumably may have top secret information.
I mean,
if you believe the conspiracy theories that Trump believes, they definitely have top secret information. So he's asking Russia to hack through those.
But he's being sarcastic. It's like, okay, well then just go tell South Korea to drop North Korea to drop a nuclear bomb, right?
Right. Uh-oh, our TiVo just
stopped pausing.
Just came undone, and Hillary's speaking again. Just turn it off with that remote right there, Cody. Let's all just pause and listen to this random part of Hillary's speech before Cody turns the TV off.
See, we were doing our research, and also, guys, we're drinking beer, so things get unpaused.
We're about three beers on.
So what do you think it was weird to hear about Bill and Hillary's love story? So
I don't. I mean, Rachel Maddow, after Bill's speech, I feel like she felt that it was a weird choice to start with in 1971. I met a girl, and just sort of.
But I told you right before that happened, the day of the speech, before Bill spoke, mm-hmm. I was like, he's got to talk about how he met her and how he fell in love with her, because she's such a cartoon. Right. They both are.
Which is actually what he spoke about, the cartoon Hillary and the real Hillary.
Yeah. They're caricatures of each other, and their love story has gotten. Or their marriage, because, you know, who knows. But it's weird. It's weird to hear about this marriage that we all think we know or that we've seen. So that's weird. It's also weird because every single male politician always starts everything off with, before I begin, I have to thank my better half, Mrs. Right. Todd, you know, and then it's like, okay.
It was awesome to see a man give the wife speech of a candidate. He did a great job. Bill Clinton's always great, and I think he did what he needed to do. He humanized her, but he also. I just love the theme of the fact that she's been on the right side of things and that she's been fighting for the little guy her entire life. And the story of her going undercover into a segregated, you know, private academy school and like talking to the admissions officer and saying like, hey, wink, wink, there won't be any black kids here, right? Wink, wink. And the guy being like, yeah, don't worry about that. And then her being like, fuck you, I'm undercover. You're getting sued.
She's got you.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I didn't know that story.
I think anybody that's been in politics this long becomes some sort of like hyper version of themselves. And so basically the way we're at now is that unless you get somebody that literally just started being a politician like yesterday, they're going to have this massive amount of baggage. I mean, she has a voting record that spans, you know, 30 year. Well, I guess.
Oh, no, she has a voting 20 years, but that spans 15 years. But,
political record.
Yeah, she's been in the public eye for a long time, and she's been attacked for a long time. And I think there's a lot of people, that I've talked to down in South Carolina the last couple of weeks who just don't like her. I don't know.
I know. I just it's
don't like her.
What is it? Her vagina? It's like she had a baby once. Like, I don't know. And I don't know how to combat that. One thing we were talking about that really bothers the fuck out of me is this honesty thing. Like, I just don't trust her. I just don't believe her. And she's running against a serial lying sociopath.
Yeah.
And we're talking about that we just don't really like get her. But I mean, she's definitely not as charismatic a speaker as Michelle Obama, Bill Clinton, Biden.
She's not. And I think the first 5 to 10 minutes of her speech tonight, I was a little bored when she was talking about the Constitutional Convention.
Because she's like
13 college. I don't know. It was like a history lesson and it was just a dry.
But she's like, listen, I'm a fucking doer. Give me the goddamn job and I will do the shit.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that speech became great. And I think I can't remember who I was talking to about this. It might have been you. But the thing that I really loved about Hillary's speech tonight is that there were a couple of laughs in it. I mean, there was the moment where she was like, I believe in science. And then she burst out laughing because it is a fucking laughable thing to have to say.
Yeah.
But you do have to say it because...
Well, this whole convention had laughs. So this is a question I have. Does Donald Trump ever laugh?
Right.
Has anyone ever seen him tell a joke or make a joke or laugh at a joke? That's a serious question. Yeah, can you think of...
Yeah, and that's scary. I mean, as someone who is incapable of laughter, that's like the number one best fun thing to do in the world. And, he never does it. I mean, does...
Did anyone tell, like, a funny story about Donald Trump at the convention? Like, we heard funny stories about Hillary and funny stories about Bill and funny,
Right. Because he can't take it. He can't laugh at himself. I think his kids and his wife and everybody who works for him and Scott Baio and Sabato Jr. and all the other amazing top-notch people that spoke at that convention, like, they'd be terrified to make a joke about him. He can't take a joke. And other than, I mean, his idea of jokes are making fun of others. Every single joke Donald Trump has ever told is pushing down. It's making fun of someone.
Which is the classic as comedians. When someone does that, it's the number one indication of insecurity.
Yeah.
And a person like that person's got some fucking shit going on in their brain.
You don't need to make fun of a disabled reporter.
lowest common denominator.
You don't need to call Marco Rubio little. You don't need to call Elizabeth Warren goofy.
He doesn't even laugh when he says these things.
No.
Because
he might smile or smirk.
It's a smirk.
Yeah.
So let's talk briefly about the celebrities for this convention versus the celebrities for
last week, I guess,
can't call them celebrities,
but, it's always been that's always been a lopsided thing that
creative
actors and musicians are typically Democrat, and the Republicans have always had John Voight and Clint Eastwood and I guess Arnold Schwarzenegger. But it's just funny that even like the good celebrities, I guess John Voight did like a voiceover or something for the RNC last week, but the so-called, good celebrities that they have didn't even turn up last week. And it's just so like, just, I don't know why they even try. Just don't bring out any celebrities. If the best you have is Scott Baio, keep up their old talking point, which is like, Obama's all Hollywood.
Yeah, but they don't have anybody. So they literally ran out of family members and they were like, we got to go get Antonio Sabato Jr.
Right.
Who
said Obama was Muslim from the stage.
Yeah, and also that's a bad thing, even if he were, But I do think maybe that does hurt. I mean, this was like a powerhouse, like amazing musicians and actors. I mean, fucking Meryl Streep gave a speech and nailed it. I think she's just doing research for like a Hillary biopic. Yeah. But, maybe that is bad if you're in middle America. You're like, oh, look at all these rich celebrities supporting her. Like, does that hurt her image? I mean, I don't know.
I think it just
makes her look cool
as fuck. And I don't think it was overdone. I mean, a lot of the celebrities that were there were like hosts. Like Elizabeth Banks was basically like the Oscar host for last night.
It felt like the Oscars. The whole thing felt like the Oscars, right?
Yeah. No, it did, because famous people are coming out and being funny and,
because Democrats have a sense of humor.
Yeah. I want to talk about the Obamas a little bit. They both are so great, and it's so sad that they're going, and I miss them already. I think Michelle had the best speech of the whole convention.
Michelle, hands down, had the best speech. I mean, just from beginning to end, when she said that line about she wakes up every morning in a house built by slaves, I mean, I lost it.
Yeah, I think everybody with a heart burst into tears thinking about the first black president and his wife waking up in a house built by slaves and, looking at the lawn and seeing their daughters playing.
But why can't we translate that into this being the first woman? Like, why can't we get as excited about that?
I think people are starting to. I mean, I think there was a lot of excitement tonight. Was it on both sides of the aisle? I don't know. I mean, I have a grandmother who's 94 years old and who's like, just can't get excited about Hillary. And I tell her on the phone, but you know, you don't have a lot of years left. Don't you want to see the first female president? Well, maybe I do, but not her, you know?
And I know it's not her because they've hated her. But
who's it
going to
be? She's literally, you know, I think,
but they don't like her. She was just too strong and confident, and she came in and got an actual role as a first lady, like an actual governing role. She was put in charge of something.
Just Say No was pretty big policy.
Actually, that did shape the drug laws for a decade.
It
and
set
also,
progress
back. Yeah, it was pretty bad. Yeah, I don't know. I'm so inspired by having a female. I mean, I can't express how it felt as a woman to see a woman standing there and giving this speech. And it's hard to tell a man that. But I think every woman should have felt that regardless of their party affiliation. And she also, I don't like to talk about her looks because that's just bad, but she looked gorgeous.
She did look great.
And she looked so good. And she just, you know, it just was inspiring to see this like fucking kick-ass grandma up there being like, yeah, give me the fucking keys to the car and I will get us there. You know,
I wonder if every future female president or every future female senator, whatever, is going to wear the same kind of attire that Hillary wears, because it's very specific.
Yeah.
I just wonder, you know, I mean, who was like the first guy to wear a suit and tie and a flag pin and have their...
Oh, she didn't have a flag pin on tonight.
Well, it would ruin that perfect white getup. But, you know, somebody wore the suit and tie and parted his hair perfectly. I don't know if JFK was the first one to do that or who it was, but...
They're like, yeah, well, I guess we all have to do that. That's the presidential look.
Yeah, I mean, it's great.
Just hearing you say, like, the future female presidents is like, yes.
And that was a great line from Hillary when she, you know, cut in two nights ago. She made that surprise appearance at the end of the night via satellite. And, you know, she was with a bunch of young girls behind her. And, you know, she made some comment, but I'm speaking to all of you who might be the next female, you know, president. And, you know, it's such an important thing. And I think, the fact that we have a kid who's 2 years old that has only known a black president. The TV was on MSNBC the other day and Al Sharpton was speaking and he pointed up at the TV and goes, Obama. It's like, well, I mean, Al Sharpton's lost a lot of weight and he's pretty thin and he does kind of look like Obama, I guess.
No, you're just revealing that our son thinks all middle-aged black men are the president of the United States, but that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So, like,
but
you
it
know,
is, but whole... it's like, you know, the only president he's known is a black president, and I hope that he'll know a female president yet. And, you know, I think it's fun to think, like, maybe, you know, he's a white male, but maybe there won't be a white male president in his lifetime. It's possible.
Until he becomes president.
I mean, I've been saying this all year that I think the Democrats just need to, like, every 8 years they need to come up with a new first. You know, let's have Michelle Obama 8 years from now, first black female president. We got to have the first gay president. We got to have the first Jewish president. We got to have the first atheist president. Like, let's do it all. You know,
I think what do you Hispanic. Think is the will be the last
atheist,
minority that
atheist for sure.
Atheist? I think you said Asian.
No. Yeah, we'll have an Asian president.
I don't know. We've never had it. I mean, do we have any Asian senators? Not counting Hawaiian.
I'm stumped. I feel like surely yes, but I'm sure. I know it's grossly underrepresented. I'm just.
I'm going to Google. Do we have any Asian senators?
But you know what? I'd actually take atheists back because I think, like, gay marriage and like acceptance of weed, I'm hopeful that acceptance of non-believers or rejection of religion is going to sort of hit this tipping point, and you know. Even this election, like religion, like Donald Trump is the Republican nominee, and I think everybody knows that he does not give a fuck about religion.
No,
you know he pays lip service. You know the only policy point that he had in his entire speech was that preacher should be able to talk about politics from the pulpit, which is disgusting if they want to keep their tax-exempt status. But he's not actually religious. And, you know, Chelsea talked about how she grew up going to church with her mom, and I believe that's true. But I don't think the Clintons are particularly religious people. And, you know,
but that's how it is. Like, I think what's frustrating, you look at Bill Clinton, for instance, and he's a cheater. We all know he cheated on his wife. Mm-hmm. Who knows what their marriage is like behind, you know, it seems like they have a real partnership.
Blowjob is definitely cheating, by the way.
Yes. You were trying to slip that by me. No, it is definitely cheating. Okay, got it. If it's done to you, if you're giving it, then it's fine.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Good to know. But yeah, I think that we have this image in our head that politicians need to be married and family people.
Oh,
and
first single president.
Yeah.
I bet we've had Cory Booker might be the first single president. I bet we've had a single president.
Somewhere. No, we have. We've had a confirmed bachelor.
Who was it?
James Buchanan was a confirmed bachelor. Yeah. But
first single female president. That'll be.
Yeah. But once we get rid of these stereotypes, then all these scandals will go away. Because, like, not everybody is cut out to be married. So.
Right.
Wouldn't it be great if somebody didn't have to go and get themselves a beard or some woman they didn't love and cheat on her. And
right.
They could just be like, no, I don't want to get married. I like to fuck lots of people. And I'm going to do it in the White House. And we'd all be like, yay.
It's a great stump speech.
You know, or it just doesn't matter what my personal life is like. There is one currently, there is an Asian.
Who?
Mazi Hirono. But she's Hawaiian, and I said Hawaiian.
Right.
Don't count. And then John Ensign, that's one I remember from Nevada. He was Republican.
Oh, yeah.
He resigned in 2011. I think that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's five on this page.
A long list of first...
minority or first, you know, religious affiliation that the Republicans are not going to be the ones to get to.
There's seven of them total.
In history.
Yeah, geez, man. Come on. Anyway, I'm just all for it. I think once the Senate and the House and all branches of government look like America, we'll start getting some more representation of what Americans actually want.
Yeah. But I thought, obviously, Michelle Obama had a home run. I thought Obama was great. You know, I thought, you know, don't vote boo. I mean,
don't vote, guys, just boo.
don't boo vote was great. I thought his, you know, we don't want to be ruled. I might be saying that wrong a little bit, but was great. But yeah, we don't want a dictator. We don't need a strong man. Nobody wants, you know, it's America. We don't want to be bossed around.
Yeah.
We want a leader, and we want to do it together.
Biden was great, just super folksy and sweet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but inspiring. He's great. Oh, poor Tim Kaine.
Tim Kaine was fine.
He was fine. And actually, I like that. I had a tweet that said, behind every strong independent woman is a competent and boring man.
Yeah.
Just like, it's kind of nice. We've been so overwhelmed with huge personalities in politics that I just like, can we just have like a nice guy who makes kind of dorky jokes and speaks Spanish? And
yeah, I know
there's nothing to get excited about him, but he'll do and that's what vice presidents are supposed to do, right? It's just be like kind of boring,
I guess. So
and able to take the job over if it happens.
And I think he's capable of doing it. I mean, I can't imagine him as president, just his demeanor. But at the same time, I mean, they had that promo video for him, and it showed him giving a serious and somber speech after the Virginia Tech shootings when he was, you know, governor of Virginia. So he has that experience. I think he can exude gravitas when he needs to. So, you know, he'll be fine.
It's like sort of reminded me of like, there's this movie plot of like, you know, the last, I think this actually might be a TV show that's coming out. If so, cast me in it. But that plot where everybody's died, like all the there, and you know, it's like the next in line for president is like the secretary of, you know, nothing.
Right.
And he gets automatically promoted to president. It kind of, Tim Kaine kind of looks like the dad that, like, you have the Secret Service people knock on his door and he's playing softball in the backyard with his kids. And they're like, we need you in Washington.
You think about King Ralph. King Ralph.
Oh, yeah, King Ralph. No, I think there's actually a TV show that has that plot line. It should star Tim Kaine.
He's fine. He's not on
Elizabeth Warren. That would have been amazing.
Yeah. But, you know, Elizabeth Warren, I think, is not the best orator either. I love her. I think she's great interrogating somebody in a Senate committee. I think she's great one-on-one with Bill Maher or in any kind of, you know, talk show format. But giving a speech, she was better this year than she was 4 years ago.
And Tim Kaine and Mike Pence are going to have an interesting debate. It's gonna feel like the two dads at the soccer game that are fighting.
And one is like, Mike Pence is like the dad of the bully.
Yeah, exactly.
Who just he's like threw the baseball, you know, just hit like three batters in a row.
And he's going to push Tim Kaine to his limit, and Tim Kaine's going to be the dad that's like, don't you talk to my son that way.
Yeah, and Tim Kaine's son is like in a wheelchair playing for the other team. And Tim Kaine's going to have his moment where he speaks truth to power.
So I want to wrap this up because it's late, but how do you think Hillary did? Let's end with that. And do you think this whole convention is going to give her a bump?
I hope so. I mean, it's disgusting to hear news that Trump got a bump last week. If Hillary can't get a bump with that amazing parade of speakers and celebrities and, you know, great writing and humor, and it was a great week, I thought. And I thought that she was great. I, you know, as I said, I thought it started off a little slow, but a lot of great lines. I think, you know, no, Donald, you don't, is going to be, you know, on every show tomorrow. She just had a number of great lines and laughs. I believe in science. Laughing to herself was great. The thing that was such a stark contrast to me was the fact that it had policy in it. There was history, there was biography, and, you know, some of that is boring, or I've heard it before, and heard it even from other speakers this week. But when she got into, here's what we're going to do, and, you know, not super, super wonky, but pretty wonky for a primetime speech that all of America's watching, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, because she's put some fucking thought into being the president. I thought the convention as a whole was amazing and really just felt like so refreshing and lovely. I know that that's coming from a super liberal person, but it felt like the production value was great and the speaking lineup was great.
And I think by, you know, midway through Michelle Obama's speech, nobody really cared that there were a couple of whiny people in the audience.
Oh, she shut them
She shut them up, and I think they appeared here and there, and they had their chance planned out where they were going to do, they were going to chant TPP whenever somebody said something or whatever.
Even though she's against TPP.
Yeah.
I guess they don't believe that.
But I think that's not the story. I mean, I guess tonight it was a little weird that every time they cut to Bernie, he wasn't smiling. He was just kind of sitting there, but
That's Bernie's personality.
It's just him, right?
Meme that's going around of him dropping his speech with Larry David music on the Curb Your Enthusiasm music underneath of it. Look it up if you can't see it. And Bernie's great, and he did a great job of rallying everybody.
Yeah, we didn't talk about his speech. I thought his speech was great. You know, and what a tough position for him to be in. And
tough.
He sort of created it himself. I mean, I think he could have, you know, after the California primary, or at least after the D.C. primary, made an appearance with Hillary and endorsed her a little sooner.
His followers have been so adamant about it. I think he needed time to, you know, not just seem like he was totally flip-flopping on, you know, and had to do it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I wonder. I see that argument. I also see the argument that he just sort of let it fester and let them hold on to this false hope of we're going to go to Philadelphia and we're going to force this roll call and we're going to change it, you know.
I really hope that Bernie supporters see that, we have to vote for Hillary. But also, Bernie Sanders lost. And he didn't lose because of some DNC emails, which were terrible. And I'm glad Debbie Wasserman Schultz is gone.
Yeah.
I completely think that it's ridiculous to be biased against two candidates. Do, however, hope and think that if he had done better in the campaign and was winning, they would eventually rally behind him, as they did for Obama when he was the nominee.
Yeah, I had
Hillary.
I think on the first night, I tweeted, as a massive Obama supporter in 2008, I would like to personally thank all of the Hillary supporters at that convention for being a decent human beings. And I was just kind of making a joke because I was frustrated that all of the Bernie people were not being decent human beings. Not all the Bernie people, but the Bernie or bust people who were in that arena, who were yelling and interrupting servicemen. I mean, you know, just being very disrespectful. So I tweeted that, and it caught fire, and it got retweeted about 1,000 times. And Joan Walsh retweeted it, an MSNBC commentator and journalist, and who was a big Hillary supporter in 08. And I think that led to a lot of other, like, old time Hillary supporters seeing it. And I started getting all of these at replies from all of these Hillary supporters from 2008. One, thanking me, which I thought was crazy. Just like, thank you for saying that.
Yeah, thank you for thanking me.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, thank you for thanking me. But no, it was just really kind of touching of just all these people being like, thanks. It was hard for a little bit.
Yeah.
But there was never any question that we were going to get behind Obama.
Right, but I think there's something different now, because I think some Bernie supporters, and not all, think that the election actually was stolen.
Yeah.
And but people, Bernie lost the election because no minorities voted for him. So he lost the South completely, mm-hmm. In a landslide. So that is why he lost. You know, would he have been a better candidate against Trump? I don't know. And I'm not sold on that. I mean, early polling suggests that he would have, but that's before he got run through the Republican machine.
Has the luxury of never having a single attack ad geared towards him this entire cycle. Had he won, who knows what the opposition research
and
machine would have come
Hillary
out.
Has had opposition against her for
her entire adult life.
Exactly. So anyway, my hope is that Bernie supporters will come around. I think not going to get all of them.
I think polls say already that 90% of Bernie supporters are there. And, you know, I think he did a good job of saying that we got to get the word for Hillary, and we got to support Democrats.
And did a great job of making the platform so liberal.
Yeah. Which is great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to wrap up because it's late at night here. And we're going to have a live show at the end of August. I think
we'll probably have another taping before then.
Yeah, we'll do another podcast before then. We're going to look to book some really great guests at our next live show. I think it's Monday, August 24th, off the top of my head.
At 8 p.m.
At 8 p.m.
UCB
and by
East.
The way, we have a new slot at UCB.
Yeah.
Like a permanent slot. I think it's the
fourth Monday
of
every month at 8 p.m.
8 o'clock. I think that's right. So it'll be, this podcast is going to be more reliable. Our live show is going to be once a month, and we'll hopefully do a home
recording.
We're
going to have a regular schedule for you until the election.
Yeah. Yeah. Please, share the podcast if you like it. Tell your friends about it. Go into iTunes, give us a rating and a comment, and don't forget to vote in midterm elections.
Do it. Bye.
Good night, everybody.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.